on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Friday, November 1st, 2024 edition. And that's right, we are into the final couple of months of the year. Hope everyone had a wonderful Halloween last night. Hopefully, children got a lot of candy and everyone else had a lot of fun. Well, today's show is especially interesting because we are not only heading into the final 2 months of the year, but the final two trading days before the election. We just have Monday and then Tuesday. You know, we won't know the results until at least later after the market closes on Tuesday. But, you know, that means that market gyrations are probably at hand. We're already seeing that. We saw a sell-off in markets yesterday, a little bounce back today. But, you know, how good of a bounce back was that? We'll get to that here in a little bit. But today's show, as usual, is not just about the next couple of days, or the next couple of weeks or a couple months. It's about the years ahead and learning lessons that you can take back and apply to your investment situation, your personal financial situation, and reach your own goals, your own version of financial freedom, as we say. And we do that by answering your finance and investment questions and bringing you topics that we think are important for you to consider when you are making your investment decisions. So we are going to, in a bit, run down the market performance and run down the show topics that we are going to touch on today. But as usual, we're going to tackle this caller question first.
What do you think of Cincinnati Financial Corporation? C for China, I for India, N for Norway, F for France. Do you think it's a good long-term hold? Thank you. Bye.
All right, looking at Cincinnati Financial, and this is in the insurance business, offers commercial and personal lines of insurance, commercial casualty, and commercial property insurance. So this is a boring industry. Nobody really likes the insurance industry. Doesn't get you excited, but you know, for me, what gets me excited are good businesses, profitable businesses with good balance sheets, and Cincinnati Financial certainly checks a lot of those boxes. You're talking return equity around 25%, return invested capital around 23%, very minimal debt on its balance sheet, $2.5 billion in free cash flow on an enterprise value of $20 billion. That's a pretty nice free cash flow yield, over a 10% free cash flow yield. You definitely like that. The technicals are strong and certainly in an uptrend. And you certainly want to continue to see that. They've been buying back shares consistently throughout the years. If you go back 10 years ago or so, they had about 164 million shares outstanding, now about 156. So the amount of shares outstanding continued to go down, and that's how they are returning capital, in addition to paying a nice 2.3% dividend yield. Now, is this the right time to buy after this run? I do think technically you're seeing some MACD divergence. You're definitely seeing a momentum slow a bit here, but this is the type of name that you do want to own. Probably want to wait for a pullback. Somewhere in the 125 to 130 range would be an ideal buy zone for Cincinnati Financial. But overall, I'm going to give this a thumbs up. Thanks for the call. Now, we love a live call, and it's a good way to kick off a Friday. Don from Walnut Creek, California, asking about CVE, and he listens to the Invest Talk, listens to Invest Talk via our podcast. How you doing, Dan?
Fine, thanks, Justin. How you doing?
Good. So you're looking at Cenovus Energy, correct?
Yeah. I know. I think you said that you guys have it for your clients. And I purchased some. It hasn't done too good. It seems to be underperforming the other oil stocks. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on it now.
Well, we don't own it for our clients. What I did say, I think, in the past is that when we were looking at Canadian oil names, this was in their running for one of the better ones. Now we ended up picking a different one.
Oh, okay.
That's larger. Let's just say that. But You know, Synovus is it's a Canadian oil name, about a $30 billion market cap, and they're out of Alberta and it's Saskatchewan. They have refining business here in the U.S., and I think that's what's hurting them as well right now. Their refining business is struggling. If you just look at the other large refiners like Valero, they're certainly struggling, and so that's one issue that that I see here. So it's not a bad company. It's just going to be more volatile because of that refining business, because it is in a it does produce a lot of its oil and gas from Canada, which tends to be a high cost area to produce oil and gas. And so its profits are just going to ebb and flow more with oil prices. And so now the oil prices are down on their luck, you know, this is seeing that that volatility to the downside. Now, it is approaching some major support here right around $15 per share. So, you know, I don't know if I would dump it, and plus oil prices, I think, are near the low end of the range that we expect it to be in. So, you know, it's one of those things where there are better oil names that are out there, better Canadian oil names too. So you might want to think about replacing with one of those, but it's not a bad company. No major issues with it. I just think, you know, there are better that are out there.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for your help. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, I'll talk about today's planned topics and today's market activity. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the Invest Talk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk is made better when listeners add their voices.
This is Nick from Seattle.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina.
Could you comment on Barrick Gold, G-O-L-D?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
Be patient. Don't rush into anything. Understand what you own.
I would probably trim here, but I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it.
Voice bank calls are very important, but so are the spontaneous questions that come in during the InvestTalk live stream.
Let's pivot over to a live call. We love those.
Looks like we got our first live call. I love live calls. Let's
go. If you've never called, what are you waiting for?
Let's go take another live call.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little.
Looks like we got a live call.
Call InvestTalk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
888-99-CHART. InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point is about common gold investing mistakes to avoid this November. Gold prices are fluctuating mainly to the upside, but you're seeing a little bit of downside over the past couple of days, and it's crucial for investors to be aware of the typical pitfalls that many investors fall into when looking at investing in gold. We also have some other topics on the docket. One is in regards to digital payments and credit cards. And during the pandemic, the amount of digital payments through credit card networks were rising about twice as fast as overall consumer spending. But that is slowed. And we'll talk about why that is. And could that be a threat to the overall the payment networks, Visa, MasterCard, et cetera. And then we had some earnings reports. We had Amazon after the bell yesterday, and Microsoft, Google, et cetera. And they are spending a lot of money on AI. So we'll talk about what that means for their profits and is it going to be justifiable in the long run? So we'll look at those topics as well. We also have voice bank questions that came in via 888-99-CHART and questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. But most importantly, we are going to take your live calls at 888-99-CHART. We love those live calls. Now, let's take a quick look at the market today. Overall, it was a decidedly positive day, but certainly the market faded throughout the day. You had the S&P up about 23 points, about 0.5% there. But, you know, that's after a little bit of a bounce from yesterday's big market sell-off. And frankly, it was a bounce that really wasn't that strong. The value side of the market certainly ended negative overall. Really large cap growth kind of held things up, and that was mainly on the back of Amazon's earnings, and that was certainly a positive. But if you look at, for example, small caps, that was those lagged a bit, and like I said, the value side of the market was certainly struggled. And I think you could see some more downside into next week as we approach the election. And obviously, markets are going to jockey for position based on their expected outcome. And then ultimately, that outcome will probably drive less of a major market move, but more of a market rotation. And obviously, it depends on which sectors do better, and that will ultimately drive markets up or down. So with that said, let's pivot over to a question that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel. And Jim Lay says, I thoughts on NXPI after its recent pullback. Now, this is a name that peaked out back in July around $290 per share. And it hit a recent low around $220 per share. Now it's at $238. It's really been consolidating since, call it mid-July. And frankly, that is bearish consolidation and overall not really a good look from a technical perspective. Now, that's just the technicals. Let's go take a look at the fundamentals. And what you see here is a business that is decelerating. You know, pre-COVID 2019, they were like 85 cents, 672 in 2018, however. So that was some nice earnings. But last year was it looks like the peak in earnings. You had $14 and a penny for earnings, an all-time high. But this year, earnings are supposed to fall 4%. And analyst expectations for this year and next year continue to come down. Last quarter, revenues fell 5%, earnings fell 7%. And for everyone else, what this company does, it's a Netherlands-based company. They provide mixed signal, analog, and power management, and radio frequency integrated circuits. And ultimately, this is a business that is historically very, very cyclical and goes up and down. You know, earnings go up and down. And you know, I think we are at the start. If you look at the broader SMH, the semiconductor sector as a whole, it's lost momentum. It peaked back in July, just like NXPI did, and it's really been in a downtrend. Now, some have been in a bigger downtrend than others. ASML is a good example. You know, that peaked out at $1,100 per share. Now it's down to $674 on the day. You just had, obviously, some accounting issues with SMCI. So, and then you have AMD that continues to be in a downtrend from a high of 220 all the way down to 141 now. The only one that's really holding up the space is NVIDIA, and that's starting to show a bit of weakness as of late as well. So I just don't like the overall semiconductor industry right now. I think it is headed for that classic oversupply, over-inventoried type of cycle, and ultimately that constricts profits, margins, you typically get a large correction in these names. So I would certainly pass on NXPI for now. Let's keep things moving and swing back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank. You know the number? It's always 888-99-CHART.
This is Romero from the Bay Area. I'm currently looking into the Celsius Holdings, ticker symbol CELH. That's a drinking energy company, and I'm thinking about investing in them, but I wanted to see what you think of this company long-term. If you do think it's a good company to invest in, what's a good price point? Looking forward to your answer. Thank you.
All right. Looking at Celsius Holdings, CELH. And this is your kind of the new age monster energy drink. Supposed to be healthier, supposed to burn calories, et cetera. And they did a partnership with Pepsi, I think it was last year, year before. And that really sparked a lot of growth of the business. They lost money in 2022, but made 77 cents last year. Earnings supposed to be flat this year, also to 77 cents. What's kind of happened with Celsius is Pepsi bought a lot of their product and pushed. They invested in the business and they said, we're going to distribute your product as well. And they kind of bought too much Celsius. So I think what you're seeing is near term, it's just kind of an inventory correction. But overall, sell through of Celsius is still pretty good. So I actually kind of like this. I'm starting to bat around the idea of buying Celsius around these levels. It's fallen pretty dramatically from over $95 per share down to around 30 to 31.48 today. Nice move to the upside today. And I'm starting to like Celsius down here. Now, could there be another quarter of poor growth or maybe even negative growth because of that over inventory situation? I think that's potential. But ultimately, you know, I think it's a good risk versus reward down here around $30 per share. That was Celsius, CELH. Now we're moving into a break still to come on this podcast and radio show on AM 1220. I will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to our main focus point as well. So stay with me, but also give me a call at 888-99-SHARP.
The weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is about gold investing and some mistakes that you want to avoid when trying to gain exposure to the precious metal market in general. Now, gold, you know, it ebbs and flows. It has its day in the sun from time to time. You saw that from the late 90s up until really through about 2012 is kind of when it peaked out. Let me go back to a monthly chart here. Sorry about that. There we go. Yeah, so it peaked out around 2011. There we go. And then it went kind of through a long consolidation period up until about 2019, and it started to take off. Yet another consolidation period between 2020 and late 2022. But overall, it's been in an uptrend for the last couple of decades. If you go based on, you know, 2000 highs in equities, gold has certainly outperformed equities. And so I think for everybody, especially in a world of monetary debasement, you are likely to, and geopolitical uncertainty, you're likely to see gold continue higher. Now, that doesn't mean that it has to go higher every single month or every single quarter or even every single year. It can have periods of consolidation, pullbacks, et cetera. And I think you certainly can see that. So the first thing to understand is no tree grows to the sky. It's going to have its challenges from time to time. But in general, I think the trend is higher because of our debt situation and the ability or the need for governments to inflate away the debt. And gold is a good hedge against that. Now, the first mistake, though, is to try to time that pullback in markets. You don't know exactly where it's going to be. A lot of people say, oh, if the dollar gets stronger, that's going to gold's going to pull back. Well, guess what? The dollar's been strong lately, and gold's now at an all-time high. So don't sit there and try to time it. That's the first lesson, okay? And then the second is, don't think you need to put all your money in gold. You know, a lot of people think that I've had calls like this. It's, hey, I want to sell all my stocks and buy gold. And I think that's foolish as well. I think gold or precious metals or harder assets can be a prong of a broader portfolio, but an important one and a fairly sizable one, but not the only thing that you own, okay? I think of it more as the typical 60-40 portfolio that you've seen in the past. If instead of those two prongs of bonds and stocks, I think harder assets like gold and silver can certainly be maybe that third pillar that diversifies the portfolio and has that strong hedge against inflation. And then the question next is, what type of exposure should you get? Now, the first most people ask is, do I need physical? Do I need to go buy bars of gold? Should I go to Costco and buy bars of gold? Well, I'm a personal believer that I don't think that's necessary. If you need bars of gold and the world has come to that situation, you have far more problems, okay? Now, does that mean you shouldn't own any bars of gold or physical gold? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying you having a little bit is not the end of the world. It's not the worst idea. But that's not the only way that you need gold exposure, okay? And the other is gold IRAs. I see this all the time. Oh, look, let's go invest in this gold IRA. Well, guess what? You can get access to gold in any IRA, okay? Whether that's through gold miners, an ETF like a GLD or an XAU, et cetera. There are other ways, there's many, many ways to get access and exposure to the gold market beyond just a gold IRA. Those are just ways for you to, for people to peel your IRA away from you and put it all into gold. And guess what? Gold can certainly have bad periods like it did from, you know, 2012 all the way to basically 2019, where gold was drastically underperformed stocks. And a lot of people say, oh, well, interest rates are at zero, so you need to, you know, there's going to be inflation. Well, there wasn't, because gold or inflation isn't just that simple. Okay. There are many factors that go into it. And so you really need to understand what drives gold prices. And that means that you can have setbacks in the gold market. And therefore, you don't want to just have your whole IRA in gold. And the last one is, yeah, not paying attention to the market conditions. Typically, when liquidity comes off, meaning like in 2022, you had the Fed raising rates. And this is a perfect example, right? I'm gonna go to a weekly chart so I can get some better numbers here. I'm just going to look at the GLD. But basically, interest rates started to go up in late 2021, 2022. And basically from, what was this, February of 2022 all the way until the fall, gold prices went down. GLD went from, you know, 186 all the way down to 153. Why? Because liquidity conditions were tightening. The Fed was trying to raise rates. They were doing QT. They were trying to rein in inflation and tighten liquidity. Well, gold was kind of a canary in the coal mine. That's one of the reasons why I thought equities would bottom in the fall, was that gold started to take off. And that was an indicator that liquidity was starting to loosen up into the system. And we've had loose liquidity pretty much ever since. And that's why the GLD has gone from, 152 or so at the bottom all the way to $252 per share today. So gold's at an all-time high because of that liquidity. Can liquidity tighten up again? Sure. And gold will probably suffer in those periods. But in general, the powers that be, the Fed and the Treasury, are going to need to keep liquidity relatively abundant in order to finance the deficit and keep inflation moving higher. And that's why gold, I think, long-term is a good hold. Now, in the next and best talk, we'll cover this topic, flipping houses versus renting, which real estate investment trust strategy is right for you. Understanding these distinct approaches help align your real estate investments with your financial objectives. That's on Monday, but for now, I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now we've got another live call, John from St. Louis, asking about Budweiser.
Yeah, I was calling because I just noticed they had earnings, and their earnings seemed pretty positive with the one note of beer sales dropping volume globally. And I guess it's kind of a big thing for Budweiser. But everything else seemed really positive about the stock. And it also looks undervalued to me, which is why I bought it a little while ago, and I've been holding it. I still believe in the stock, but I was just curious why, if they had a positive earnings, why the stock might drop after the positive earnings, and if you think that, also if you think that Bud's a good company to hold on to for a long-term hold.
Well, remember about earnings that it's not just about what the earnings were this quarter. It's about what are analysts, what is the company guiding profits to going forward? And I think my biggest issue with Budweiser is they have a lot of debt. And what you talked about is they have see beer sales falling worldwide, right? Seltzers are kind of inching in on their market share, and they don't have as a bigger of a presence there. And so when you have, there's a combination, a killer combination that can really take down any business, even a pretty decent, great brand like Budweiser. And that is a lot of debt with shrinking profits, shrinking cash flow. And that's what you're seeing here. Is if you continue to see beer sales falling, they're not going to be able to sustain this level of debt, and that suddenly becomes a bankruptcy candidate. Okay, and okay. Guess what the value of that equity is? It's nothing. And so in these instances, I want to lean a lot on what the chart's telling me. And the chart is telling me not many good things, right? The reaction to the earnings falling from, you know, it's about $65 about a week ago. Now we're down to 59. And if you zoom out to a weekly chart, this is just in a longer term downtrend. And so I just think there's much better places for your capital, better risk versus rewards. And I don't think it's really cheap, to be honest with you. You're talking based on backward-looking earnings, about 20 multiple. Yeah, based on forward-looking earnings, high teens, which that's not cheap. Especially for something that's not growing very well, you know, our revenue fell 3% year over year.
Right.
So I would just sell it and move on. I just don't think this is a great risk versus reward. And I think there's a lot more potential downside. And what's the catalyst of the upside? That suddenly people will stop drinking seltzers and drink beer again? I don't know. I think that trend is relatively new and fairly durable. So I just would not be owning Budweiser.
Right on. Thanks, Justin.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now, on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of some key benchmark numbers. So let me hit this list for you. The two-year treasury yield was 4.2%. And for some perspective, last week it was 4.07%. So you saw the two-year continuing to move higher, despite a jobs number that was fairly lackluster. Overall, you continue to see the Fed rate cuts being priced out of the market. Usually a Fed follows the two-year treasury rate, just a heads up here. And it's with that 4.2, that's kind of telling you that the Fed might cut two more times and then stop. That's pretty crazy, right? So, but follow what the market's doing. That's usually what the Fed does, okay? The 10-year treasury, that did move up from 4.21% last week to 4.36%. at the close this week. So nice move up on the 10-year as well. Gold prices did dip slightly from 2738 an ounce last week to 2736. But like I said, kind of overbought a little bit, probably needs to go through a consolidation or pullback period. Would not shock me at the current levels in gold prices. Silver, that was down a little bit as well from 3359 an ounce to 3247 an ounce, bigger pullback there. Oil was at 69.66, down from 71.64 at the close last week. The national average for a gallon of gas, regular gas, $3.12, 2 cents lower than it was last week, and way down from where it was just 122 weeks ago, a couple of years ago, at $4.25. Now, California averages $4.55 per gallon. Wow. We pay a lot here. That's a 4 cent decrease, though, from last week. Now, for comparison, in Mississippi, the gas is averaging $2.68 per gallon. Now, guess what? We asked for live calls, and you responded, and we will go talk to Bob in San Ramon looking at MNKD, which is Mankind Corporation.
Yes.
And you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
I actually own it. Okay. And I had wanted to find out if you think it's a good stock. The chart looks wonderful, but it's being so heavily shorted. It's really got a tremendous number of shorts, and I wanted to get your opinion on that, what that means.
Well, it means that the market is betting that the hype around their products is not going to meet the expectations. Let's just say that. And the reality is that's most biotech companies. Now, the good thing about MannKind is that it's actually profitable. Now, it wasn't profitable really up until last year when it finally made money of 2 cents, supposed to make 9 cents this year and 17 cents next year, about a $2 billion market cap. And what they do is they develop inhaled therapeutic products for patients with endocrine and lung diseases. Okay, so it's one of those names that has a lot of hype around its business, like most biotechs. But and it's, like I said, it's rare because it's profitable. But how much actual profits can it squeeze out of these products is the big question. Because guess what? 17 cents a share in earnings doesn't justify a $7.17 share price. It's going to need to drastically increase those earnings from where they're at now. Now, the market is expecting that. Right? Revenue grew 49% last quarter. Profits grew 600%. So it's on a nice growth trajectory. Frankly, I would probably hold it, mainly because the chart is pretty good. Like you said, it's in an uptrend. I see no issues with it. As long as it's still growing its earnings, the market's going to continue to expect that. And you're going to see short squeezes. So that short interest, as long as things are going well, it's actually going to bring fuel to the fire. It means that people are going to be in pain. They're going to have to buy to cover their position. And that naturally brings in more buyers of the stock. So, you know, usually I don't like biotechs, but I like the fact that this is now profitable and profits are headed higher. It's still very high risk. You know, you could easily have growth slowing. If suddenly growth slows once again, it already slowed from 150% revenue growth last June quarter to 49% revenue growth this June quarter. A lot of that's the law of large numbers. So, but it's going to need to continue to grow, you know, 30, 40% top line in order to meet the market expectations of where it's trading. And as long as it does that, it will probably, once again, add fuel to the fire with the short covering. But if it suddenly has a 15 or 20% revenue growth quarter, which sounds great, this stock is going to get hit hard. So understand it's very high risk. You probably want to trim a little bit to right size your position over time. But I would keep it and ride the wave of short covering from a lot of those shorts.
Okay, that sounds great. Because I know they have a bunch of stuff in the pipeline. They keep talking mm-hmm. about, you know, the different phase testing that mm-hmm. stuff in the pipeline, mm-hmm. you know, which might be there and might not be there.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's a lot of biotechs. What's good, though, about this one is that it's not losing money anymore. It has positive free cash flow. So it doesn't have to continue to issue shares like a lot of biotechs do. You know, most biotechs, you know, they spin a great story, but they're burning capital and they have this great pipeline, et cetera, but it's all just a story. What's good about recently, basically since 2022, let's call it 2020, yeah, late 2022, the number of shares outstanding growth has slowed considerably. It's still going up, but at a very modest pace over the past year or so, which tells you that they don't need to issue shares anymore and dilute you, the shareholder, in order to make good on that pipeline. They're positive free cash flow, and they can continue to operate the way they are without issuing more shares. So once again, it gives them runway to operate on that or to execute on that pipeline. But what's good is they're profitable, and I would hold on to it, trim slowly over time. Think about maybe January 1 from a tax perspective, maybe if that's what you want to trim. But I would keep a stop on it, probably the 100-day moving average. If it drops below that, that's when I would probably worry about it. But I would continue to ride it for now. Thanks for the call. Let's briefly mention the newest KAPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. And this week in the KAPP Insight section, we will discuss an update on the current market conditions. And in the stock idea section, we mentioned an industrial distribution company and manufacturing company. And in the portfolio management section, we touch on an economic regime of the 2000s. And if you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox every Saturday. Now, let's touch a bit on the credit card networks, And, you know, Visa, MasterCard, they trade at pretty high premiums, pretty high multiples to the overall market. Visa at 26 times, MasterCard at 30 times. And that's because they run quality businesses. They should trade at a higher multiple than the average. But if you look at recent earnings reports, for example, on MasterCard, you had a pretty big sell-off yesterday. It did bounce back a little bit today, but that's that was of note. You know, the momentum looks to be slowing. And I think a big reason for that is credit card volume growth is not what it was during the pandemic. Dollar volume of U.S. debit and credit card payments reported by Visa and MasterCard were growing twice as fast as overall personal consumption expenditures. So, you know, if personal consumption was up 3%, the growth in credit card volume was 6%. And so it was eating into total transaction volume in the economy. And that meant for, you know, if you play that out at some point, you know, the credit card networks are the ones that are handling all the transaction volume. But for the third year running, the growth of credit cards relative to consumption overall has been a lot more muted. It's running at about a third faster, so still growing more, meaning taking a bigger share of cash transactions and other types of payments, but at a much, much slower pace. And the dollar volume of credit card payments in the U.S. will continue to rise as long as the economy expands and prices increase. And that's one thing that is about Visa, MasterCard, or any of the payment networks, is that it is a pretty good hedge against inflation because they are participating in that increase in prices overall, as long as their volume stays relatively steady. Now, during the pandemic, more people were shopping online. Obviously, that is through a credit card. And even in-store, a lot of networks moved to contactless or digital cards. Think of Apple Pay on your phone, etc. Urban transit systems like the New York Subway showed that you could pay at the turnstile with a tap, etc. And so it's a natural evolution that kind of the pandemic accelerated. But what you're seeing is there are increasing alternatives to these networks. Think of Zelle and Venmo. Okay, these are networks that are not using the Visa and MasterCard system. And then cryptocurrency, a new alternative for cash. And there are a lot of cards that allow you to transact in currencies. Now, there's a lot of them are still using the Visa MasterCard network, and then they just do a currency transaction between dollars and crypto when they swipe that. But, you know, over time, there will be more options within, I think, the crypto space to transact. And I think that could encroach on Visa and MasterCard's volume. Now, there are still some opportunities, though, for them, which is commercial payments. A lot of times that's paid via check or wire and not through the Visa or MasterCard networks. Now, most businesses, they avoid those payment rails mainly because they don't want to pay the 2.5-3% transaction fee. You see that with a lot of gas stations, et cetera, that kind of give you two prices. At least here in California, I see that two prices for credit card or cash or debit. And so that's something to consider, is that they do have some opportunity there, but I don't think that will probably move very much. Now, there's also some other risks beyond just other payment alternatives, and that would be antitrust. You have Visa in the midst of an antitrust suit in regards to their debit card network and potential legislation around credit card swipe fees, and that could drastically hurt their business. I think that's probably an even bigger risk, at least in the short to medium term. I think long term, the crypto space and other alternatives are a big risk to Visa and MasterCard. But the near term, it's okay. What's going to happen with the next administration and these antitrust lawsuits? And so investors shouldn't take for granted that these are going to stay in place over the long term. That's why I think the multiples that many of these payment networks trade at could be in peril over the long term. So I wanted to highlight those data points. Okay. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekend, is help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I just wanted to give you a call. I started my Roth IRA, and I wanted to invest into a Vanguard mutual fund. I have $3,000 in there to invest it per their minimum requirement. And I've been looking at, you know, certain mutual funds regarding their expense ratio, turnover rate, and looking for like a risk factor of probably 3 or 4 since I'm 22, just to get started. What's your thoughts on something that I should put my $3,000 into just to start my Roth IRA for this year? I appreciate your feedback. Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by risk factor of 3 or 4, I think you said. We don't use that scale, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or I'm not sure what scale you're looking at. I think that's the big question is that moderate? Is it aggressive? Is it conservative? I'm not sure. The first thing I would say is probably wouldn't set up at Vanguard. You can access Vanguard funds anywhere. You don't need to be a Vanguard. In fact, Vanguard is not a good place to hold assets. Their service is poor. Just historically, it's just not a good place. There's no need to hold your you should never really hold your money at any mutual fund company. It doesn't make sense. It kind of pigeonholes you into really those funds, those fund families. And usually the service isn't as good as, you know, say, we use Schwab, but it could be Fidelity, it could be E-Trade, it could be, you know, a lot of other brokers that are out there that are going to be better. Not Robinhood, but, you know, a lot of those big brokers. And so that's the first thing. I would move your Roth to one of those other big brokers. Then you can invest in anything you want. Now, if you're relatively young, you know, what I would say is lean on the value side of the market. You know, there are value ETFs. Vanguard has a value ETF. So focus on something like that, because I do think value over the, you know, the medium to long term is going to continue to outperform. And if you can give me more color, you know, head over to InvestTalk and reach out to investtalk.com and reach out to us and give me a little more color on your risk profile, and then I can help you out a bit more. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's touch on the tech earnings. And it was really powered by infrastructure surrounding AI. And they're spending tens of billions of dollars on the AI boom. And it's not about the business the software of AI. And that's really not where most of this growth is coming from. It's actually the infrastructure to support the software. Now here, that's where I think there's an issue, a potential issue here. I think it was Global Crossing is a good example of the 2000 version of this, which was they were just laying a ton of fiber because of the internet, right? We need to rely fiber so we have fast internet around the country, and because everyone's going to need internet. And what sounds to me, it sounds very similar to that, it's saying we need cloud infrastructure so that these AI tools can access our cloud, and they're paying for us to access that cloud and that computing power to run their AI software. And obviously that's going to be in higher demand. That's clear, right? AI is not going away. It's going to evolve. The question though, in my mind, is what type of real businesses will be created out of this AI boom? A lot of this software that's being developed will either A, fall flat on its promise of what it can do in the end, right? They're probably working toward, you know, a lot of them are working toward something, but they may not actually get there, maybe because the leadership team or maybe just the technology isn't quite there yet. So that's number one. Number two is, okay, it might do what you want it to do, but what is the actual market for it? I think of like a biotech company, right? Oh, they might actually come up with a cure for X, Y, and Z, but what's the true market and how much profit can they actually earn from that drug? Same thing here. There'll be a lot of companies like that. They overestimate how much revenues and profits they can squeeze out of the tools that they're building. And so ultimately, there's going to be a lot of those that fall flat on their face and they will go under and they will no longer need as much, you know, they won't need any or as much cloud infrastructure maybe as they're using today. And I think that's the biggest risk here is that they're spending tens of billions of dollars to build out this infrastructure that maybe needed now as these businesses are, and softwares are is being developed, but how much of this software will actually turn into true businesses that can support this and continue to pay for this cloud infrastructure. So that's something that we'll be continuing to watch, but I worry that they're overbuilding and they're going a bit too fast. Well, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and your investor risk number by heading over to investtalk.com and clicking on the portfolio review button. And this is a free and confidential service. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Have a good weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights.